Utilities Commission meeting to order, today being Monday, February 11th. Mr. Scott, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Commission.
Morning. Does anybody have any changes to the agenda today? Matt, I'd look for a resolution for approval of the consent agenda.
Yes, so moved.
We have a resolution and a second. Looking at the bill payments for the month. Mr. Hamm, can I have you run through just a couple of things? We're at the top of the year here regarding HSA contributions, para, and some of that. Just kind of explain that to us a little bit further.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner Matter. Page two on the accounts payable, there's three listings there for the HSA Viva plans. And the first one is $1,948, second total is $81,000, third total is $37,000. At the beginning of the year, January 1st, the utility makes contributions into the employees at HSA and Viva's for the year. That was changed, I'm going to say, about 5 years back. It used to be the dollars were paid in January 1st and July 1st, 50% mid-year and 50% the first of the year. But through union contract negotiations, that was negotiated to pay that all in the first of the year, so the employees have those dollars to meet their deductibles. So that's the HSA Viva contribution. And then if we go down to page seven, it's the first highlight. That's a capital project. The Pram substation is highlighted. And on page nine, some more Pram substation expenses that were paid. Then if you go to page 12, second last page, PRA. PRA is paid in every paycheck. The employees pay in 6.5% of their wages into PRA. PRA is a public employees retirement plan. And the employer pays 7.5%. So those contributions, every other week we get paid, and those contributions are listed on the accounts payable every month as liability, both on the employee and the employer's part that we pay in. Any other questions?
Thank you, John. Any other questions on the payments for the month or minutes for our last meeting at all? Doesn't look like it, Beth, if you could do roll.
Certainly. Excuse me. Commissioner Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Magnuson?
Aye.
McDonald?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Mabu?
Aye.
All right, that carries. Thank you. Next on our agenda, we have the educational topics, looking at power supply for this meeting. And Ms. Carlson, if you could take it from here.
Thank you. So we have the year-end review for power supply for 2018. If you remember, the end of 2017, we presented the modeling results that remaining as a business as usual would cost us $4 million more than joining a joint action agency. And then also remaining an independent municipal utility would cost $660,000 more. So the decision was made by the commission to join a joint action agency. Shortly thereafter, we put out an RFP to two joint action agencies. And in February of 2018, the RFP responses were received from MRES and SMMPA, and the decision was made to join MRES. That was based on cost savings and being able to retain our transmission assets along with the transmission revenues. In May of 2018, the MRES membership was made official after completing the following: the confidentiality and non-disclosure agreement, the MRES membership agreement, power sale agreement, otherwise known as the S1, the reserve capacity agreement, and the member renewable resource agreement. And with the facilities assignment agreement, before it could be executed, MISO legal department needed to determine whether we could remain a transmission owner once our facilities were transferred over to MRES. That was confirmed and approved in December of 2018. It took many months. And the FAA was executed at that time. Now, the joint pricing zone agreement couldn't be written until we had the facilities assignment agreement ironed out. And now it's scheduled for a March 1st, 2019 filing at FERC with an implementation date of May 1st, 2019. At that point, MRES will take over the transmission function and the billing and transmission revenues will pass through MRES and onto us with no markup in price. Then in May of 2018, now this is something that Jaron talked about at the last commission meeting, but for me, for power supply, it's also important to note that the diesel units were upgraded to be NESHAP compliant, which enabled us to register the units as load-modifying resource units, where the capacity is counted towards the MISO resource adequacy. In the summer of 2018, the load share program was implemented twice in June to reduce the electrical load during high humidity and 90 degree plus temps over the peak hours. This enabled us to reduce the load by 3.5 megawatts each hour for 9 hours, which is a total of 31.5 megawatt hours. In October of 2018, the 2018-2019 gas contract was renewed. Firm capacity is needed for the district heat, but as customers are switching over to their own heat source, we were able to reduce the amount of firm capacity. For the winter, it's 600 decatherm a day, and summer firm capacity is 200 decatherm a day. And just a reminder that a final gas contract is needed for the 2019-2020 gas year, which will take us through to the final decommissioning of the district heating system on July 1st, 2020. And I'm continually working on the transition of MRES, assuming the power supply responsibilities on June 1st, 2019. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
Doesn't look like it. Appreciate the update there.
Okay. And then I'll just move on to the December power supply report. It's also known as the WMU cost of power. It's a new report that is presented in kilowatt hours instead of megawatt hours, and it includes all fixed overhead costs so that it reflects the true cost of power. So, the WMU cost of power graph, the blue bar for December, shows a cost of 5.7 cents, and the overall cost of power for 2018 is at 6.4 cents. So just a reminder that the monthly cost is calculated by taking the total cost for the month and dividing the number of hours purchased and generated. And the year to date is calculated by taking all the monthly cost to date and dividing by the total kilowatt hours purchased and generated for all months to date. So each month that I report this, you're going to be looking at the latest month, but for the, and you can see all of the other months, but for the year to date, you would only look at the last month, the month that I'm reporting on, okay? Because that number changes each month. I also wanted to explain that there will be times when a bill is received after the month end cutoff, so it'll be booked to the next month. That is why June of 2018 charges were exceptionally high. You can see that on the graph. WIPI's May bill came late, so June has May and June WIPI charges. Also, the MRES buy-in of $420,000 was included in June, plus we received a bill for the extra capacity purchase from SMMPA. So any questions on that?
Chris, one question I would have regarding the, I guess, the generation portion of this, is that pretty much exclusively the wind turbines for us at this point?
Yes, and just a little bit at the end of each month for the diesels.
Okay.
We exercise the diesel units.
Any other questions at all? Doesn't look like it. I appreciate this new report. I know you've been working for a while and kind of reconfiguring this, so thank you.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. I do have one more thing to talk about, just very brief update on how the polar vortex affected our utility. When the temps ranged from a high of only 1 degree and a low of 29 below, with a wind chill of 55 below. Now, this happened on January 29th through the 31st, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We had a gas curtailment that day called by CenterPoint Energy, which meant that we were limited to only our firm capacity of 600 decatherms. The curtailment lasted for 48 hours, and the plant staff did all they could to keep the decatherms under 600. During that time, maintenance staff tried running the diesel units, but the fuel was turning to jelly, and so the units weren't able to generate. The financial impact is unknown until all bills have been received. So a full report will be given after the details have been reconciled, sometime around the last week of February and the first week of March. So I'll give you a lot more information at that time.
Did we have any difficulty keeping up with the heating customers during curtailment?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. As Chris noted, staff was doing what they could to manage our gas supply. Did we have any concerns with the customers? The short answer to that is no. We lowered the heat in the district heating system by roughly 20 degrees, and that was not noticeable on the onset by the customers, but by the time we were through that five-day window, we had received, one customer that called that said, is there anything you guys are doing? Because it seems to be a bit cooler in our facility than it was prior to. So short answer, no, not really. We made it through that cold spell quite well, all in all.
Okay. Appreciate the update on that and look forward to the full report on that one. Any further questions on that? All right. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Then, let's see, moving along, Ms. Steen, you've got some updates for us.
Mr. Matter, Commissioners, good afternoon. In your packets available are the 2018 meter and customer service year-end review forms. Before I go into the census and the R&I analytical piece, I just want to share a highlight with you. Prior to the evolution of the AMI, we received one meter reading per month. Now, with the AMI and getting hourly reads, this equates to actually 720 readings per meter per month. So that's pretty colossal data. If you look at the graph that's included in your packet for the Census R&I network performance, this is just showing information that I pulled on a given day for a particular group of meters. Within that group, we had 8,149 electric meters that were receiving a 98.4% daily read performance. So we're never going to get a 99%, but we are relatively close to that number. We're actually getting very good readings to the tower and the information that's submitting back to the office. With all the meter alerts and alarms that are identified in our network performance, we received 4 alerts for meter tampers. We were able to identify where those meters were put in place incorrectly and charge customers accordingly. We didn't have that capability before, and it's nice that we can identify some of those misplaced meters in our structure, if you will, out there. We had 2,470 fewer truck rolls, which means we had transfer of service from one customer to another in 2018 due to the ability that we can read those meters in office now, right at the fingertips. Any of the customer service reps can ping a meter immediately and get simultaneously reads, which we weren't able to do going forward, or in our legacy system, if you will. So that was pretty impressive. The next slide in your packet is our 5-year consumer trend sales and revenue reports. Those I've broken down by commodity. You can see our residential, commercial, and industrial customers, along with our heating customers, and then the cubic feet of water sales. Over the five-year history, you can see that it is relatively flat. So that is the usage report. If you flip to the second page, that is actually our revenues received during that same time period, with that broken down on residential, commercial, heat, and water sales. That five-year revenue period follows the consumption graph, and again, is relatively flat in sales and revenue. Not much to report on there, just informational. Then I'll go on to the Administrative Board Annual Analytic and Data Reporting. Just kind of information for you in detail. The total number of electric customers that we currently have is 9,646. The total number of water customers is 6,681. So that kind of relates back to that first R&I. The number of information and the number of reads that we're getting through the R&I is huge. There's a lot of data that we didn't have readily available to us that we do now. Then we'll go on to the total payments received from low-income customers with local agencies that we participate with, $187,782.18 was collected. The total number of disconnects that we had for non-payment in 2018 was 154 accounts. It's been drastically reduced over the number of years due to that. Multiple payment options that we have available now for our consumers. It's more on a real time for them to easily, readily available to make payments. The number of disconnect notices that were mailed out during the cold weather roll months was 5,094 for the year of 2018. And we had one customer that entered into the cold weather roll protection plan. They entered into a reasonable payment arrangement we were able to work out for them. And we'll have no difficulties collecting any of that offset there. The number of cold weather rule appeals for 2018, we had none, which is good. And the number of disconnects throughout the cold weather rule period, we had zero as well. Number of customers that we did enter into payment arrangements were 327 customers. The number of customers that broke those payment arrangements were 68. Number of NSF checks received in 2018, $50,316, and there were 111 checks that came back to us. The total write-off and uncollectible accounts that we had in 2018 was $75,442.48. So just kind of some statistical information for you. Any questions on that?
Doesn't look like it.
Okay. The next graph that you have in your packet there is on paperless customers. And since 2015 year-to-date total, we have 851 customers that are using our Smart Hub e-bill applications and going paperless billing. The biggest increase we had was in, obviously, 2018. We had 383 customers sign up. And in the month of October, we had 80 customers alone use those services. This is the direction that we want to go. And then the next thing in your packet on the page is the meter workshop training and education. Currently we have two staff that attend hands-on workshops throughout the year on an annual basis. They participated in Larry Chapman's metering school in March 13th through the 15th of 2018. With that being said, they go over a lot of safety and personal information, wiring, and different things with industry standards that they can actually have hands-on experience while they're testing different meter types and meter forms. So it's a very important class that we let them attend. They have two different other workshops that they also attend on an annual basis, which is the UMMA, Upper Midwest Metering Association, and the MMUA Annual Networking Workshop as well. They're able to share information and gather more experience relating to electric revenue and how that affects metering. Then on the next slide, we have the customer service workshops, training and education. And basically the ones that I want to highlight on there, we have 2018, Lois Nelson and Nancy attended a 3-day MIT conference in St. Louis. NISC has a lot of hands-on opportunities, and whether it's networking or on the pathway, there is a module that they can go in and take any kind of learner course, if you will, that gives them hands-on training, and they have a test, if you will, that they can test out on. If they don't pass that test, then they go back to the beginning and learn some more tips, tools, and skills, if you will, to navigate through any of the processes on iView. And so that's been very beneficial as well to customer service staff. We also in customer service attend the APPA and the MMUA annual workshops. We are invited to MRES, looking forward to working with them in 2019 to see what they have available there. They have a large, with the Bright Energy Solutions and working on the low control modules, they're have a lot of material, if you will, for marketing that I'm looking forward to using and utilizing in 2018 and partnering with them on that. So that concludes my meter and customer service year-end in review. Any questions?
Stacy, going back to slide, I think it's 3, looking at the 5-year history consumption, I noticed, although it was relatively flat, there's a slight uptick in most categories, except industrial actually seemed to trend downward, actually every year of those 5. Do we know what, can we attribute that to anything in particular?
Not necessarily. What we've made on the industrial customers, mind you, there's 18, if you look at the slide in front of that, we have 18 industrial customers. That growth has actually been reduced a little bit with Genio and the avian flu. The new customers that we've added in 2018 on the commercial side of it have kind of picked up that loss that we've had in industrial customers. So it does typically still remain flat in sales.
Okay.
So due to them being a little bit more efficient, and then us adding commercial accounts makes up that difference.
Sure. Any other questions? Stacy, thank you for the report.
Welcome.
All right, moving along, we'll get an update on the wind turbines. Mr. Marty.
Thank you. So as you see in the January wind turbine report, the turbines had a decent month, 624,884 total kilowatt hours. We had a little downturn with our availability percentages, and that had to do also with Chris's polar vortex. I blame it on her actions. We found that the wind turbines actually are fail-safe at 20 below. So if the temperature dropped below 20 below, they both units faulted out, and we're not able to get them up and running for a few days. So the pumps stay running, and certain heaters and things like that stay down to keep fluids operational, but they will not operate below 20 below. So that had to do with our availability for the last couple of days of January. As you see on the next slide, though, the 624,000 is actually our second highest over the last 5 years, so it was overall a good month other than missing a couple of days with cold. So that concludes the report, unless you have questions or
Kevin, does there seem to be a trend between one turbine performing better than the other out there?
I would say that, you know, each turbine is unique. One turbine seems to be a little bit, turbine four seems to be a little bit finicky over turbine three. A few more faults and those kind of things. Maybe if you have 100 trouble of alerts, you know, you may have 60 or 70 of them, or 70 of them on turbine four versus three. So it's just a little more finicky for each. They look the same from the ground.
Sure.
Definitely unique when you get up there. So.
Are more of those faults, do they tend to be more mechanical or electrical?
Typically more electrical. Set a fault, or they don't get an unwinding fault, or certain things like that. But there are certain times and there's parameters set in there. If it's supposed to do something within 10 minutes and it takes 10 minutes and 8 seconds, the guys will have to reset it.
So okay.
Typically, they you know, for the most part, 80-90% of the alarms they can reset from their laptops.
Sounds good. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Kevin. Next on the agenda, we have a legislative update from MMUA. And Commissioner DeBleek, maybe you want to kick us off on that one.
Okay. Yeah, we were went down to St. Paul for the legislative update with MMUA. They picked coldest day of the year is right turn of polar vortex. Yes, so. Position statement, I think everybody copied a copy of that in the folder from MMUA. What their position statement is, we had half a day reviewing position statements and what the issues were. We spent a half a day at the Capitol, met with Andrew Lang, and went over some of the issues with him. And we also met with Dave Baker. He's very interested in the CIP and CIP changes, try and make things more equitable throughout the utility, but the major the issues is, you know, that do with CIP, how that's calculated, what we can use for CIP and what we can't. There's a talk about you know, the comment was made about how many 90% refrigerators can you replace. We're in the point now, I think, where we're replacing efficient refrigerators with efficient refrigerators, and we're paying a CIP payment out on those. So so looking at some of the changes that can be made there and what's justifiable and what can be, with the move toward electric cars, electric vehicles, I think there's more opportunities for that with the CIP. Just the market for electric vehicles is moving up at a high rate. There's going to be more of the charger units put into homes, garages, should be looking at hotels, restaurants, various places for charging stations for electric vehicles, because they're the up-and-coming thing. So, renewable energy standards, another item that was talked about. There's some possibility of increasing the renewable energy standards. There's some legislation out there where they want to move it from the current, was it 25 by 25? They want to move it to up to 50%. The common thought, I think, with MMUA is that you know, you look at load growth, and which has been pretty well flat for most utilities over the last 5 years, and I think that's pretty much where we're at. It's pretty much flat load growth. It's pretty much market-driven. There's a lot of wind power coming online to replace coal that's being retired, and a lot more solar that is coming out online out there. So big thing now is looking at some, you know, storage. You can't store electricity anyplace, but when it's dark out, you don't get much production off your solar plant. So there is some ways for storage, but it's expensive. And I think as time goes on, the cost of that will probably come down as well. The other issue, broadband. There's the issue with the border-to-border broadband, those grants that are out there, and how that is being implemented, and what involvement the utility can have in that, which our involvement is not too much. So, but as there is a continuing move to get broadband available throughout the state to every home in the state. So I guess I don't know, John, that I think those are kind of highlights of my notes. So
yeah. Thank you, Commissioner DeBleek. The other thing in your packet, as Commissioner DeBleek mentioned, you have an MUMUA packet that looks like this. In there is a position paper, as Commissioner DeBleek mentioned. I would encourage everyone to take a little time to you know, flip through it, take a look at it. A few more details in there and what we have time to give here today. Some of the speakers, in addition to our visits at the Capitol, we had a couple speakers as well in the day that we were down there. The first topic was on a changing role of energy in today's politics. Basically, talked about rooftop solar, what energy is being produced there, and also the potential for electric vehicles to consume the power that's produced by rooftop solars, and in fact have a need for additional over and above what solar is putting out. So end results for utilities, it should be a net gain of electricity as we continue to move forward here. Presently, there's 800 electric vehicles in Minnesota. I was surprised by that number. I was expecting it to be much higher than that already. And a study by AAA, 20% of the people surveyed said their next purchase is going to be an electric vehicle. So as Commissioner Bleek had indicated, electric cars are on their way. And 85% of electric vehicles are being charged at home. They don't see that trend continuing. It's the other 15% that will be charged publicly. So like at, you know, grocery stores, restaurants, hotels, overnight, things of that nature. So those institutions will, you know, more likely be interested in charging stations, you know, particularly probably hotels. So other issues that were talked about, MMUA staff talked about a few other things that were going on in the industry. You know, we all know it's getting harder and harder to obtain grant dollars. There's less available. That has to do with, over the years, cities expressing concerns with the stipulations attached to grant dollars. Too many stipulations coming with them, weren't using them, so therefore they cut the dollars back. That's why there's not as many dollars there. I did not know why. I know that they've been significantly reduced, but I never really heard why. But supposedly, that's the reason. They, you know, grants came with too many stipulations. The stipulations cost more than what they were getting in grant dollars to complete the project. So cities kind of, you know, funded those projects with other means, basically local bond dollars. So that was interesting to hear that. Also informed us that there is some new interconnection processes coming, and there will be holding, the Department of Energy will be holding some training on that and rolling out those interconnection processes that we're going to have to follow on. Those interconnection processes I'm talking about has to do like with solar energy, distributed generation, things of that nature that are going on homes. So that was would be the highlights of the presenters that were there, in addition to what Commissioner DeBleek had talked about. So with that said, I'd just like to say thank you for, you know, allowing us to attend that workshop. We always pick up some good information there, and the networking is also valuable. So thank you.
Thank you guys for both taking the time to do that. I know it's not always something that all of us can take the time and do, so I appreciate the updates there. Anybody else have any questions for the guys? Okay. All right, next on the agenda, we'll look at a Missouri River update. Mr. Heron.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Mattern. The first attachment there is a written outline from Missouri River of their board meeting, and the second is the video. So unless there's questions from the written outline, we can just go right into the video and then answer additional questions later, if that's acceptable. Thank you.
Services and Western Minnesota Municipal Power Agency Boards of Directors. Missouri River's Board approved a policy stating the purpose and expanded focus of the New River Technology Committee that was authorized in December to replace the Smart Grid Committee. The new panel's task will be to identify, investigate, and analyze technologies that may be beneficial to Missouri River and its members in meeting the needs of their customers. These technologies may relate to generation, transmission, distribution, information systems management, energy efficiency, and customer-facing and other energy-related matters. Next, Chairman Harold Skibout announced appointments to the five board committees. Those are the Executive, Nominating, Finance, Personnel, and Member Technology Committees. The board approved these appointments. The board also approved an agreement with Barnesville, Minnesota, under which Missouri River will provide distribution maintenance services for that community beginning May 1st. This service will require two new Missouri River employees. Members and associates that take part in this program pay all of the costs associated with providing the service. Since Missouri River joined the Southwest Power Pool in 2015, we have had a capacity shortfall in the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator, or MISO, market. We have been meeting our members' needs through short-term capacity purchases and participation in the MISO annual auction. While this strategy has worked, it carries a good deal of risk related to the possible closure of large power plants. Last month, the board approved negotiating capacity purchase agreements with several organizations that would reduce the shortfall, but not eliminate it. This month, Missouri River's board recommended that the Western Minnesota Board authorize Missouri River staff to move forward with a study of a generation project in Marshall, Minnesota, and to sign a purchase option for property upon which the project could be located. Both boards adopted resolutions authorizing these actions. Next, the boards reviewed federal legislative position papers. These papers deal with the following topics: broadband pole attachment, municipal tax issues, protecting the federal power program, and the need for regulatory certainty on carbon emissions. Final approval of these papers will occur next month. They will be presented at the American Public Power Association's annual legislative rally in late February. The boards also heard reports from the staff on several topics. Energy Services Manager Shannon Burfield gave a presentation about a beneficial electrification project that would involve indoor vegetation production at South Dakota State University. This is a joint effort by Missouri River, the American Public Power Association and its DEEP Research and Development Program, and the Electric Power Research Institute. Federal and Distributed Power Programs Director Jeff Peters reported on his October trip to the United Kingdom. He was participating in a Smart Electric Power Alliance fact-finding mission aimed at learning about the UK's energy transition and integration of new technologies, including the evolving electric market structure, changes in generation mix, and how energy policy can drive change. And General Counsel and Legal Director Dan Harmelink reported on updates that need to be made to Missouri River's bylaws and membership agreement. The board is expected to take action on these updates at its next meeting. Thank you for joining us, and remember to join us again next month as we take a look at activities and actions from the February board meeting.
Anything in particular you wanted to point out in the notes?
Commissioner Mannerin, nothing at this time unless there's questions to be fielded.
Any questions? Doesn't look like it. That we can move into the general manager's report.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Manner. First item on there, there's an attachment with it, Missouri River 101. They are offering to come out to all their communities to give a little bit of an overview of Missouri River. The attachment, if you go down to the second bottom paragraph, they talk about the topics. Topics we will cover are the background on how Missouri River was formed, Western Minnesota Municipal Power Agency, its role, why it was formed, our power supply contracts, WAPA and Missouri Rivers, and then Missouri River's resources, and the many services beyond power supply available to your community. They're referring to it as a 101. It's going to take roughly an hour, they're saying, depending on how many questions the members may have. And if the commission is open to that, we will set that up.
Are you looking for a specific date that this might take place, or just whether or not they'd be interested this time?
At this point in time, just wondering if the commission would be interested in that, and if the commission would be, we'd get a couple dates that they would have available and probably have Beth push out a calendar to indicate which date. We probably could have an extended commission meeting if that would work best. We could throw out some options, but whatever is the commission's wishes.
You anticipate about an hour's presentation?
About an hour, yeah. So we pull it in on one of our shorter commission meetings. We've got to have our commission meeting. So if you want to do it on a commission, you know, we could probably be an hour and a half commission meeting if that was the choice of the commission to incorporate it.
Commissioners, your thoughts? I've seen one thumbs up.
I would think that's something we probably should take advantage of, it being we're new to MRS. Yes. So, and I know they offer a lot of services that I didn't know they offered when we initially joined it. But I think it would be advantageous for the entire commission to take advantage of that.
Any other thoughts? Thumbs up there. Yeah, I think that there's definite value in doing that.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Right, we will find dates that work for Missouri River and set something up. And I would support Commissioner DeBleek's comments. It's difficult for commissioners to get away for an afternoon or an evening when Missouri River hosts their commissioner updates. And being that they're offering to come to the community, I think it'd be advantageous to take advantage of that offer. So we'll get something set up. Thank you. Next, we have two meetings, both Labor Committee and Planning Committee meeting, that we will need to set up. Not sure on dates yet, but we're getting closer to the need to set those up. So you can be watching both the Planning Committee and the Labor Committee for calendar invites from Beth setting those up. Other than that, we have our APPA webinars underway. Both of them, Beth sent out emails. So far, we only have one commissioner that has signed up. So
correct.
If anybody's interested, or informed Beth that they'd like to be signed up. So if anybody else is interested, by all means, let Beth know, and she will finish making arrangements for those webinars. In addition, you can see what we have coming up. We have our APPA legislative, which Commissioner Lamar and Commissioner DeBleek and myself will be attending. Then we got the summer conference in August, in addition to our APPA. That would conclude my update unless there's questions.
All right. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Anything else to come before the commission today? Matt, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
We are adjourned. Thank you.